Hey everyone, I'm Jeff Gibber, the President and Chief Strategist of True Voice Media. I'm also the host of Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast where I bring on fascinating people from all walks of life and pick their brains about social media, entrepreneurialism, success, and so much more. For around the next 30 minutes, I get to have a really interesting conversation. You should stick around and listen in. So without further delay, let's get started.
This is episode 34 of Conversations. I'm here with Amol. I'm going to mess it up. It's Weishampayan.
Yep, Weishampayan.
Weishampayan. Awesome.
Yeah,
I did it.
Pretty close.
I'm super proud of myself for even getting close. Amol, welcome to Conversations. Thank you so much for being on the show. Can you tell anybody listening who you are, what you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm the VP of platform marketing for Stream Companies. Stream Companies is a full-service advertising agency. And there, I'm really focusing on bringing a lot of our digital campaigns to life and really showing clients how we're driving results. But really, my big focus is specifically within social, and within social, really just focusing on the Facebook ad platform and all the crazy changes and things that are going on with that.
So your role is primarily in the advertising space?
Yeah, absolutely.
And is it mostly on Facebook?
Yeah, you know, I think that what's happened a lot in social, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is that, you really have to pay to play now. And because of that, your typical social department or your social media business was really focused on all this, creating great content, which it still is, but, not so much on the ad side. And what's happened now is that a lot of social media businesses have started to really focus on the advertising side, because it's really the only way to get your message to actually show up to users of the site.
So I have so many different directions that I want to take this. So I'm just going to try and take them down one by one with you because there's just so much in that. So, the first thing is, I think, what happened to social? Because I remember, you and I were acquainted very early on in the Philadelphia social media scene. You had your company, yeah, Maiden Media, with your partners, and you guys were working on interactive full campaigns, social, web, the whole thing. And, you and I have talked about social a number of times, and there was this sort of early promise of social, this beautiful world of a democratized force that would, give customers power and such. And I feel like that's died. Is there any opportunity left in organic social? Is the dream dead?
No, I think that it's still, I think the fundamentals of what made organic social successful is still the fundamentals of what make it successful in today's world. The idea of really great content, original content that really focuses on your personas and your customers, and really understanding what your customers' needs and wants and problems and challenges are, and creating content that they are really interested in. That's still the number one, kind of best practice. I think just what's happened now is that, you have to also figure out, hey, how are we putting, advertising dollars behind these micro pieces of content and not just really publishing it out there. So in a way, you could argue that it's really evolved so that you really have to think more about, hey, not only do we have to figure out how we're creating this great content, which is the organic side, but then also how are we, really focusing on one piece of content versus another and really putting more ad dollars behind it.
Do you think companies are actually focused on creating great content, though, or do you think that they're focused on playing the game of creating great content, which doesn't necessarily mean that they're creating great content and understanding their audience, but instead that they're looking at what worked for other people to get clicks or likes or whatever, and they're trying to replicate that? Do you, like, in terms of the types of clients that you're seeing or the prospects that you're talking to or anyone, are you seeing that there's actually a commitment to providing value and being original, or is it just about being out there with everything else?
It really depends on who you're talking to, right? So, I do hate kind of generalizing, but as a pattern that I see in the market, when you're I'll call it the mid-market size, where you're not really a huge brand, but maybe you're more regional, and you're not necessarily a small business per se, but you're kind of like a good size and you're not really huge. There, you're often going to see that people are so focused on results that their marketing programs just aren't as sophisticated, and they're just thinking, okay, I got to show results in 30 days. What can I do that's going to get me the most results? And then what happens is that you back that into, okay, what's going to get me the most clicks? And then all that kind of content just ends up being very like clickbaity, which basically just means like, you know, putting a really interesting title and maybe not such great content just to get people to like click through to your website or click through to your landing page or, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, it depends really on who you're talking to. I've definitely talked with, you know, I'll call it more sophisticated, more progressive, really brands and businesses. And they're 100%. I think they kind of get it, and maybe because it's they've learned through fire. But you know, they really understand that really to create a story that sticks, you know, with their customers and their potential customers, they really have to think about, hey, how are we creating original content, and you know, how is that really on brand with what we want to be saying about our business?
Okay, a lot of the things that led us to have this conversation were conversations about Facebook ads in general. So I want to definitely go down that rabbit hole, but I want to stay at the top of ads for a second and just kind of pick your brain about this stuff. Because it feels to me like we call this advertising, and it is because you're paying for placement and visibility, and much of it is still measured in impressions. But it feels like this round of advertising, the one that's very focused on the content you're putting out there as opposed to, you know, something that's very static. Instead, it's something where you want people to kind of click through and go and engage with a piece of content. Feels a lot different, or is it still the same? And I guess sort of the thing that I want to tack on to that question is, does that put traditional advertising firms at an advantage or a disadvantage?
That's a loaded question. Well, you know, I guess when you say that you feel that it's different, maybe you can be more specific on how you really think that. It's
So I'll give you an example. Do you watch Mad Men?
Yeah.
You know, I think about the campaigns of the Mad Men era advertisers. But, you know, I guess just take any time pre-social media where we're talking about print, radio, and television. And I feel like the advertisements were, you know, the equivalent across all of them of sort of a billboard of a monologue where it was essentially you're just shouting at people in one way or another. So it's a piece of printed material that ends up in a magazine or on a billboard or at a bus station. It's a television commercial that interrupts your show. It's a radio commercial that interrupts your radio show. And I feel like now because of just the framework and the structure of how we're delivering these quote-unquote ads, we're taking a blog post and or a white paper, and we're amplifying it into people's streams. And sure, they could just see it, but the intention of the ad is for people to take that next step and actually consume the content, read through it, learn about the product or learn about the service, and then maybe even take that next step and, you know, fill out a contact form or buy the product. So it's a little bit more direct response because the opportunity is there.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's definitely true. I mean, at the end of the day, you're still focusing on, you know, how am I telling a great story, right? Every single the fundamental of advertising never changed since the 50s, since the days of Mad Men. It's about, you know, how am I telling a really great story? But to your point now, I think definitely, you know, again, we touched on really creating great content, but you're right that you're not really putting all of that content out there in Facebook as an example. You're really creating, you know, a link for it or a post for it, and you're advertising it really in more of a display sense, and you're really hoping that that message is something that resonates with the audience that you're after, and then they click on that, and then they come and consume your content. So you're right in that sense. You know, it is different, but I would argue that you know, when it was organic, I wouldn't say that it was really any different. You know, I think you were still telling a story through different things like links and content. You couldn't really put that much content, you know, in a post or on a page, but you would be kind of linking out. So I wouldn't say that I wouldn't say that aspect has necessarily changed from the kind of the quote unquote organic times to the, you know, to the pay to play times. So I don't know that's different, but, you know, to your point of, as a firm, are you better positioned as, you know, if you're a traditional agency, it's like, now it's back to our basics. You know, we're just as good at this and we're even better than some of these new firms. I would say it depends really, you know, on how you look at it. Some of these traditional agencies, I think that they retain those fundamentals of, hey, how do we tell a great story? But often what they're missing is, okay, how do we take that story and then how do we process it in a way that people are going to be able to consume it via a digital social manner?
So it it, I mean, to a certain extent, it sounds a little bit like purely born and bred digital advertising agencies are a little bit of a disadvantage to the traditional ad shops that have been, you know, telling stories for years. And the traditional advertising shops are lacking in the knowledge of, you know, how social content spreads and why people engage with a certain piece of content and how to get that next step. Or would you, is that sort of the premise here?
Yeah, I think, and again, I think we're definitely generalizing. So I don't want to say that.
Of course, there's exceptions.
A digital born, yeah, for sure. And you know, I wouldn't want to say that like a digital born digital agency is kind of be lacking that necessarily. But yes, I think that the tactical side is 100% going to be the digital agencies are going to have a better forte on that versus the traditional agencies. So really, you know, a perfect marriage is, hey, traditional agency, we have these really great fundamentals of how to tell these great stories. And then when you marry that up with some of like the digital, agencies, they bring some of the more, okay, that's a great story. You know, it's the same story we're going to be telling on all of our other media. How do we now process that story in a way that it can be consumed on a micro basis, you know, not all at once, but through many different touch points via digital. So that's, I think that's a great marriage. And I think just to kind of validate that point, if you really think about what's happened over the last couple of years, is that you've seen exactly that. You've seen that a lot of traditional agencies have been buying up a lot of these digital shops just to understand, really marry that tactical, you know, micro process transactional side of it, really understand that so they can still apply those great fundamentals that have made them successful all these decades.
So in terms of where advertising is going, and we're going to lead this into the social advertising side of things, I want to ask you about the effectiveness of ads right now and kind of what you see in terms of the lifespan of an ad. Because I feel like maybe back in the day where there were less channels and there was less content competing for our attention, I feel like the lifespan of an ad may have been a little bit longer than it is today. And I'm not asking you to tell me what it was like in the 50s, because I know we're around the same age. But do you find in your role that it's difficult to keep up, or are you finding that there are ways to extend the life of content and of advertisements?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, each content is different. So it's hard to, put kind of like a magic stat on that. But I think it really depends on what type of content it is. I wouldn't necessarily say that it has a longer or shorter lifespan. You know, I've seen, for example, one of my clients, it's called an online e-commerce business. And one way that they generate leads is through an ebook, right? It's a pretty common process that you create an ebook, you promote it, it's kind of free content that you're giving away, and that's how you're kind of generating leads. But I've seen the same ebook work, for almost a year straight. And I would have never imagined that would really be true, especially for, this is a pretty major brand and pretty major business. And you would imagine that, okay, wow, that lasts for a year and it's still doing well. It's still pulling a ton of leads and, you know, being really successful. It definitely happens. I think it really depends on the content. Whereas, you know, other clients, when we're creating different pieces of content and, you know, different types of ads, you'll see that after a month, that ad, just the lifespan is over, because the ad just starts doing poorly at the end of that 30-day lifespan. And again, you know, that could be to a number of different reasons, whether it's the business changing, the environment changing, the people changing, whether something else is newer. So there's 100 variables in there. But, you know, ultimately, I think what makes the really big difference is really what kind of content it is, and it really does change per industry.
So, I mean, assuming that you have great content and you spend a lot of your time in this social advertising world, and I'd imagine you spend the majority of it in Facebook ads, you know, what's the next step? So a lot of the listeners of Conversations tend to be small and medium-sized businesses. They're trying to figure out how social fits in their business. We've got some entrepreneurs out there and solopreneurs that are just trying to figure out the next steps. And I recently was doing a class that I was teaching, and I started to go into the nuance of Facebook ads, and I looked up and I saw that about 40% of the room just glazed over. So what's a good starting point for someone to think about how to use social ads, provided that they already, let's say, have some good content?
Yeah, I would say, you know, well, let's go over what, you know, I mean, what makes great content is definitely, we could spend hours talking about that in general, but a couple key rules that I want to go over, which I think just nicely really talks into, okay, how do we then put dollars behind this? You know, my two or three rules behind great content on social is that I really think that social often is a window into your business. And it's really a great way to understand, especially if you're in retail marketing, it's a great way to understand what's happening behind the business, really get a chance to humanize you know, the business, whether it's advertising or not. What doesn't happen via TV and radio and all these other types of platforms, and even digital, you know, Google paid search ads and all these things, you don't really get to humanize the business in the same way that you can via social media. And that's through all these different types of pictures and content and video, and that's really the only place you can promote some of that stuff. So, you know, as an example, I do a lot of retail marketing, advertising and marketing. So a lot of my clients are in retail marketing. So, you know, if you have, even let's say you have a small shop, whether it's a coffee shop, a clothing store, whatever it might be, you know, a lot of people, first tendency is, okay, you know, we're going to promote all these different products on our social media pages. And sure, you know, that's definitely a good starting point. But if you really want to really make something original, something unique, what does better than anything else is, you know, pictures of your customers being happy with your products. Like, let's say you take a picture of someone who bought this product of yours and is really happy about it, obviously with their permission and everything. Posting that kind of content really, really does better than just posting your products over and over. So I think that idea of like, hey, how can we put a face to both, you know, us as a business, a face to our customers, kind of really create this positive community instead of really just promoting what we have on sale, promoting all of our products. I think that aspect of social is so fundamental. And I think that with this advertising world that really has come into it, people lose sight of that. But really, I think where the magic is that if you marry up some of this great, you know, behind the business slash, you know, raw human emotion and content that you're showing on social, and you marry that up with the ad side, that's where you really see a ton of success. So, you know, again, going with that example of a clothing store, let's say you take a picture of someone who's, or, you know, bought some type of clothing or some type of product and kind of is giving a thumbs up and on this picture, you know, with, you know, in front of your store or something like that. If you use that picture as your ad on Facebook and you're promoting either a sale or you're, again, now you're promoting a product, that is going to outperform 10 to 1 any type of standard, you know, standard Facebook ad that has like a graphic or a post. So I think, you know, again, that's the fundamental of raw human emotion and humanizing the business. When you marry that up with the advertising dollars, you get a ton of better results.
So let me ask you I want to ask you some specific questions, because obviously I can ask you a lot of questions and they'll always start out with "it depends." In fact, most of the answers I give in a Q&A always start out with "it depends." Right. But I want to give you a specific example and just kind of hear your take on it. So what you just brought up was, and this is where the idea to even have you on the show came from, was this idea that photographs are going to outperform graphics on social ad posts. And I wanted to, you know, ask you all about that, but let me start here. You're talking about a product business where, let's say you have a customer that's happy with your product, you take a picture of them and use that as your ad to drive people to a store for a sale. What do you say to the business? And we work with a lot of highly regulated industries and a lot of service businesses. They're in the B2B space and they're really selling themselves and their service. How can you take that same idea, that same tactic, and recommend retrofitting that in a way where you can convince this skeptical audience that social even works and say, you know, we can marry this content with this advertisement and drive leads to your business?
So let me make sure I'm understanding. So you're saying that this scenario is different because it's more service-based?
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, I get that from a product side of things. And in terms of measurement, that's much easier to say, okay, mm-hmm. they came to the site or they walked in the store and they purchased it. You find out that they, you know, saw it on Facebook or something. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, let's say you're a firm that does something, you know, highly technical and highly business related, some sort of accounting services or PR or legal services, any of these sort of services that you're doing for them. How do you take that same principle and apply it using the same kind of tactic, or is it a completely different tactic?
No, I think it's still a huge fundamental. So let's take, I don't want to say the worst example, but let's take the toughest example of what you mentioned. Let's say you're an accounting firm, right? What are you going to be posting on your social media page in an accounting firm? I think this is, I'm sure most accounting firms, if they ever even want to get into social, I'm sure this would be, a great challenge for them. There, I think I want to say the same thing. When you're an accounting firm, yes, what are you selling? You're selling, A, obviously your expertise. That's number one. But what happens often with expertise, especially in accounting, is that it ends up being a little commoditized because it's really hard to tell how much of an expert someone is, especially if I'm not an accountant and I'm retaining an accounting firm as a business or personally. That expertise becomes commoditized. I don't really know which accountant is better than another besides the marketing that they're putting out there. And even then, that's all saying they're the best or they have all this much accreditation or this many years of experience. And it tends to kind of be a little bland in that sense. But what opportunity there is on social is that they can actually humanize their business. They can celebrate experience in terms of taking pictures of their employees and certain accountant firms and telling their stories of who they are and what kind of person they are. You can even make it silly. Let's say I'm just throwing something out there, but let's say once a week you post kind of like a employee spotlight type of thing. You're mentioning a different accountant that's part of your accounting practice. And most of it can be more serious and say they have this many years experience, recently worked on these types of clients, as well, enjoys, long walks on the beach and, that kind of thing. So you can kind of make it a little bit fun. And so that way what you're doing is you're kind of helping create that trust. You're kind of being more fun. And if you really think about, let's say if you are in a position where you're as a customer, you're looking to retain an accounting firm or an accountant, again, whether personally or for your business, a lot of it is really emotional. Even if you justify it with logic, what we do is I think instinctively we purchase products and services ultimately from our gut. We have a, hey, this feels good or it doesn't feel good. And yes, we do all the research and we justify everything, all of our decisions with logic. That happens. But at the end of the day, there is kind of a gut like, hey, do I trust this person? Do I feel good about it? And yes, that happens in person, but also social is a great way, again, to just start creating that trust, start humanizing the business before someone really comes in and needs to have that meeting. So again, accounting firm, again, take pictures of what the employees do, what the firm does. If you have a firm, outing or like a kind of like a monthly a happy hour type of thing, take a picture of everyone, all the accountants, kind of doing something fun or silly. And again, it kind of humanizes the business there and makes people feel more comfortable with, doing business with people that they like.
So in terms of building the case for this, if you were working with a client like this, you would do it based on the gut feeling to them of that they personally like to do business with people that they know, like, and trust, and that this is kind of a natural progression, social giving us that window into the business, that this is a way that they, as a relatively boring business, maybe an accounting firm or, a law firm or something like that, that they can actually kind of work around it and create a better connection with their possible audience and clientele.
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying that that's the only thing they should be doing, but I think it's one tenet or one fundamental of social that I think that they can be taking advantage of. Now, what you do is that that could be 80% of your content or 50% of your content. The other 50% is where you have a ton of great comments, like a guide to what to do during tax season, and like all this type of stuff that people are interested in. So that's where you're still creating great consumable content that's going to, that is meaningful content that people actually want. But you're still keeping that aspect of, hey, how are we differentiating ourselves? How are we kind of humanizing ourselves as part of the business?
Got it. Well, let's stay on the kind of richer content side of things then. And I want to talk to you a little bit about what you're doing in terms of and what you're seeing in terms of success with things like remarketing on Facebook and or Twitter, using things like the conversion pixel to see what's working, uploading custom audiences and lookalike audiences. How much of that stuff has actually produced results for you? And is it better than just the general going into the ad platform? Or boosting posts, which I know is probably the kind of Facebook ads for dummies. What's your take on what's out there and what's working?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is that there is a lot out there, so it is definitely overwhelming. And what's is even tougher is that there's even more coming out, I want to say every few months or so, or even more frequent than that. So there is a lot out there, and there is a lot that works. Obviously, boosting posts, that's kind of like the, like you mentioned, that's a quick way for Facebook to make $5 off of you without really having to do that much. So I would definitely never boost post. It's kind of like a one click, hey, donate my money to Facebook type of thing. Please don't do that. That's definitely something I definitely tell as many businesses and clients and friends that I can. That being said, the targeting is definitely where it's the most powerful. The fact that, you know, what I actually say to most, clients and even potential clients is that when I'm in Facebook ads, I really feel like I'm the National Security Agency, you know, the NSA. I feel like I have so much power, and I can target anyone by anything that they've ever done or said or liked or clicked or mentioned or commented on or done any of that stuff. Plus then Facebook has all this other crazy data on, you know, what the household income is like, how much money they make. If they just moved 2 weeks ago, I mean, the options are limitless. And I think that ability to target someone that on such a micro level, that is going to, you know, doesn't matter what types of custom audiences and some of that stuff, which I'll get into in a second. Doesn't matter how big that stuff gets, that fundamental of, hey, for $5, you know, obviously for $5, I can either put a TV ad out. Obviously TV ad is a lot more expensive than $5, but either I put out a TV ad, or for $5, I can really target people by exactly, you know, what I need. So what happens is that I get to take that $5 and I get to stretch it. I get to stretch it into 20, because really I'm reaching people that I really, really want to reach. And whereas like a TV ad is just reaching pretty much everyone within, you know, a certain geographic area or within a certain network. So that targeting, definitely really, really powerful, no matter what kind of platform it comes into. Some of the more advanced stuff that's really come out with Facebook, last couple of months or years, I want to say, it really takes that into overdrive. So custom audience is definitely a really big one. You know, I'll go over that really briefly, but basically custom audience, you know, if I have this email list that I've been collecting, which most businesses have over the last 10 years or so, because that's something that's been around for a long time, I can upload this email list of 10,000 people into Facebook. And basically Facebook will analyze these 10,000 people, and it'll be like, hey, I looked up all these people. Basically, 8,000 of them are online on Facebook, and boom, you can actually target an ad to them right now, whatever type of ad it is. And there's pretty much like 20 different types of ad types, but ultimately, you can target them right away. So now I can reach the same exact audience that I might reach in an email marketing way within Facebook. Now, where that gets into really super overdrive is that now Facebook will come back to me, and this is all via a very easy tool, but Facebook will come back to me and say, hey, I just created this list of 8,000 people that you can target, but I also analyzed that list of 8,000 people, and I found 8,000 more people just like those 8,000 people within the right whatever geographic area that you want. Now, that's mind-blowing, right? Now, I think we'll never know really the behind the science of how they're finding the 8,000 more people, but we'll know the theory. And the theory is that they analyze all these 8,000 people and they know everything about these 8,000 people, right? They know what kind of TV shows they like, what kind of household income they have, you know, what kind of family makeup that they have. So they know all this information, and they looked for all commonalities between these 8,000 people. And then taking those commonalities, they looked for 8,000 more people using the same commonalities. And so now you have 8,000 more people who are exactly the type of prospects or potential customers that you want to go after. So that custom audience, out of the other 10 or 15 things that are available to us on the Facebook ad platform, that is the number one way that converts for all of my clients over the last year and a half that it's really come into play. I mean, it is huge. I can give you an example that one of our clients is a major competitor to MailChimp. Really, really big platform. They're not MailChimp, but they are a competitor to MailChimp. And their number one way to acquire customers via social media advertising is through this custom audience kind of find more people thing that I just talked about.
Interesting. So you're saying that the one that you've seen the most success with are the custom audiences built from an email list, and then the lookalike audiences that are generated from that.
Yeah, for sure. And again, you know, like you mentioned, it does depend on what kind of industry you're in. But you know, once you do those two things, and then you start, you know, really building out your campaign set, and you say, okay, now I'm going to look for different types of interests and people who like, you know, certain types of keywords, or then I use third party data and I'm buying, you know, we do a lot of automotive work, in my role, at Stream Companies where I work. And there, you know, I can actually target people who have mentioned specific interests in a certain type of make and model, which is pretty crazy. And Facebook does this via two ways. One is, if you ever mentioned that on Facebook, obviously it knows that. But Facebook also buys a ton of third-party data. Now, third-party data, it seems like a fancy thing, and everyone's like, well, what's third-party data? Does it matter what party it is? Why does this any of this matter? Why it matters is that Facebook has all this data on all the people that are on Facebook. But then they will go buy data from other people on all the people that are on Facebook. So now when you target, you're not just targeting based on what someone has done in Facebook, but you're targeting based on what they've done in Facebook and outside Facebook, which means that you can really target the right people.
Does this creep you out ever? I mean, because I always find myself having to like play both sides of it. As somebody who's a strategist and a consultant, it's my job to advise the client on the best way to do things. And then I sometimes leave work, go home, sit down, and I think about just how creepy it is that we can follow people around the web and we know what they've done, whether or not they've shared it with us or not. Does the line ever feel fuzzy to you?
Yeah, you know, it does, but, you know, I just, you know, ultimately what I focus on is just, you know, how do we get results and create long-term value? And ultimately, as scary as it is as a user of Facebook, you know, ultimately, I think it's fine. I mean, as a user of Facebook, I'd rather have an ad that's more relevant to me than not have an ad that's not relevant to me. You know, I mean, I'd rather have things that I'm actually interested in instead of just, you know, when I'm watching TV and I see all these different ads that come in there and none of them are really relevant to me, and it actually is an interruption. In this case, I guess technically you could call it an interruption in my, you know, doing Facebook, whatever that means. But at least they're ultra, ultra relevant to what I want. So even as a consumer, I'm like, all right, well, at least it's something I like or something I'm going to be interested in.
What are some of the factors that you're gathering to make sure that it's ultra relevant though? Because, you know, I'll tell you, in the early days of Facebook ads, I remember seeing Facebook ads for things like horror movies. And I guess it was because they saw early 30s male who likes whatever it is that I like, none of which would be horror movies. And I absolutely can't stand horror movies. So I'm seeing these audiences that are totally not relevant to me. So as somebody who's a proponent of gathering the right information to target the audience, what are some of your starting points for factors that you gather when helping a client out? And obviously, I'm going to start it off by answering, well, it depends. But after that, what are some of the more common things?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I do also want to emphasize before I really answer that all of this stuff are tools, and tools are really only as good as the people using them. So, you know, if you create too broad of a message, so in this example, someone who created this whatever scary movie ad, you know, maybe they created too broad of a targeting. Maybe they should have really focused on someone who's mentioned scary movies more on Facebook, and then that's more relevant. So, I mean, you can be ultra targeted, but you also have to spend the time and the effort and be compensated for that to actually be doing that on Facebook. So that definitely makes a big difference. So that being said, you know, how do you go about doing it? So, you know, I think Facebook advertising to me is part of, you know, what I'll call a lot of really content marketing that focuses on creating personas. So creating personas is a big part of inbound marketing, and basically personas help define your ideal type of customer, right? So let's say, you know, we're talking about this clothing business. So let's say I'm still this clothing business. Within my clothing business, maybe I'm basically reaching three different types of customers. And for each of these three different types of customers, I basically want to define them. I mean, I really want to write a one pager on, you know, what age range they are, you know, their likes, their interests, you know, their family life, you know, maybe their things that they've probably done in their life or things they haven't done in their life. You literally want to paint a picture of what this ideal person probably looks like or probably does, and probably how they are, you know, on paper. And you do that for your three or four key types of customers. And once you have those, you know, three or four personas, then your Facebook ads are really easy, because now you've spent all that time really trying to shape, you know, who your customer is, instead of just saying, oh, well, it's everyone who comes in, or it's everyone that kind of sees us. That's not really always the case. I think a more progressive, a more sophisticated, a smarter business is really thinking about, you know, the key types of customers it has, and really defining that so that they, that can be better leveraged in both Facebook advertising and a ton of other things that use the same type of personas.
Let me ask you for a couple of clarifications on that. So obviously what the data you're collecting on them, or the what you're adding to the persona, should be in some way relevant to the client that you're working with, or the product that you're trying to sell. Because, you know, if for instance you're working with an automotive group, it doesn't really matter so much what shows they like, unless maybe they're automotive related. But if they like True Blood or The Walking Dead, that's not necessarily super important to it. So I guess, one, correct me if I'm wrong on that. But the second thing is, in terms of the interest that you have access to on Facebook, isn't there a certain level that a page has to get to, or something where you can target that? So for instance, you have a competitor to MailChimp. You could probably target people who like MailChimp in order to get in front of them and maybe try and steal customers away. But there may be smaller organizations that you can't do that with. Can you tell me where that dividing line is?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a, you know, again, what that quantifiable metric is. But the way it works in the back end of Facebook is basically, if enough people have mentioned it, it becomes an interest that you can go after. Now, we'll never really know, unless you work at Facebook, exactly, you know, how many people needed to have mentioned it, or how big or small of an interest it needs to be. But the best way is to kind of get in there and just start typing stuff in. You know, for example, if I was searching for MailChimp, I'll start typing MAI, and then I'll see either it comes up or it doesn't. So I'll do the same thing for, you know, if I'm making a specific, let's say there's 30 email providers like MailChimp, right? Obviously, I'm sure the big five or six are definitely going to come up, you know, within Facebook. Out of the other 25 or so, maybe only 10 show up. But the only way to really find out is to go and basically type each one in and see if they end up showing up. So unfortunately, I have to answer your question with not really an answer, in that I don't know the exact kind of quantifiable number of how big it needs to be before you can target it. But the best way to find out is just to go on it and test.
Got it. All right, I'm going to ask you one more question about the Facebook ads, and then I know you got to run, so we will wrap it up, and I want you to get a chance to tell people where they can find out more about you and the different work you're doing. But in terms of ad formats specifically for Facebook, and I'm sure we could talk more about all the different ad platforms, but let's just stay on Facebook. They recently introduced carousel ads. They've got the video that they're giving preference to above any other type of video. You know, they have all these different formats. Are you seeing any one that has, just in general, a better success rate than another? And, you know, I guess after that, I would want to also ask you about the Facebook ad objectives, if any of them are better or worse than another, any that you would avoid like the plague or definitely recommend. But, you know, answer that however you feel like it.
Okay, sure. So I think first thing, I don't know if you asked me two or three things, but I think the first thing was about what types of ad types are really most successful,
yeah,
right?
Ad types and ad objectives. Those are really the two big buckets that I was curious about your input on.
Yeah, for sure. So I would say carousel ads are awesome. Carousel ads over every other type of ad almost all the time. Like, they do really, really well. Carousel ads, you know, for those who are listening and don't really know what it is, or from the name, you know, if you guys do use Facebook and you're scrolling, sometimes you'll see an ad, and as part of that ad, you can actually swipe from right to left, and you'll see that there's like four different little cards or images that are part of the same exact business or same exact ad, but there may be different messages or different pictures and different links on it. But those carousel ads do really, really well, because it provides someone the ability to, like, not have to click on something, but still learn something without having to, you know, commit to the click. You know, I think this this idea of, oh, I don't want to commit to this click is really, really big on especially things like Facebook and mobile. So what happens is that the carousel ads really take advantage of that by allowing you to explore a little before you actually click on the advertising. So that the carousel ad does really well. You know, if you're a product-based company, you can easily do a carousel ad and have like, you know, three or four different products basically be swipeable within a certain type of category. Maybe your best sellers, maybe it's your worst sellers, you know, whatever it might be. So carousel ads really, really do well in terms of as a type of format. You know, another one that's done really well, now that was more online side. If you're a retail marketer, and again, you have a brick and, you know, mom and pop store or brick and mortar store, something that works really well is local awareness ads. And local awareness ads actually, you know, you can target that within like a 1 mile radius of an address. And you actually don't get a lot of the targeting on it, which I know is contradictory to what I was saying. The targeting abilities are limited besides the 1 mile radius of everything, but you can actually put like a call now button on it. So if you're a retail business that wants people to call you, which there are a fair amount of that, you know, like the local awareness ads does really, really well. And the third and final one that I really want to point out is something called lead generation ads. And lead generation ads is something that launched, you know, it was basically mid-October really that it launched. So it's really, really fresh. You know, if you do look online, you're not going to find that much content, not that much information about it. And lead ads, basically, if you're a business that you want someone to fill out a form on, you know, on your website, and that's what you count as success, like, oh, someone filled out this form, you know, that's how I'm basically tracking success in my marketing campaign or on my website. The lead ads basically allow someone to say, hey, I want more information about this. And you get their information without them having to fill out any form, right? Normally it's like, oh, I'm clicking on this piece of content or clicking on this ad. I'm brought to the website. Oh, okay, these guys sound more interesting. I'm going to fill out this form with my first name, last name, email address, whatever amount it takes, and I'm going to fill out the form. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to fill out this form. I just wanted to check it out. Whereas the lead ads, again, take advantage of that because now you don't have to fill anything out. You just have to say, yes, I'm interested. And boom, you're as a marketer, you know, you basically have that potential customer's information right into your database.
That is very interesting. I have not seen those.
Yeah, they're very new. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, last question on like the ads piece of it is that, you know, I know that with some of the ads you have kind of for the same kind of objective, you may have two different options. So one that we've come in contact with a lot is, let's say you are trying to get somebody to your website and you want them to download a white paper, let's say. You have two options, which is either cost per conversion, basically, you're looking for a website conversion, or you're looking for clicks to website. Now, both of them are going to get people to the website, but Facebook is only going to charge you if people convert on the website conversions one. Do you have any experience with kind of testing those two directly against each other and whether one works better than the other?
So it's interesting. We actually, you know, at least in the past, I don't really focus on cost per conversion, but I do choose the conversion optimized objective, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the conversion optimized objective, that one's really good and is always much better than the click to websites because basically what Facebook there is doing is instead of just mass sending people to your website based on all the crazy targeting that you do, it's actually sending people to your website based on the type of people that are converting. So, you know, let's say I did all this crazy targeting, all the stuff that we just talked about for like the last half hour, you know, and I create this campaign. Facebook, as soon as like a few people convert from that, Facebook will say, huh, out of this crazy targeting, you know, group that was created, about 10 of these people converted. Let's find in this same group more people like these 10 people because, you know, they're going to convert better and that's going to be better for this person paying me all this money. So that's kind of how, you know, the conversion optimization work, that works really well. We usually don't really focus on cost per conversion. Really, we're really focused on, you know, cost per impressions and that ends up, you know, doing much better for us.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and explaining absolutely everything that you could about Facebook ads, but I feel like you should probably write a book or something. So like where can people go to find out more information about you, the work that you're doing, content that you've put out? Where can people go and find out more about you and be social with you?
Sure. No. So because, you know, this world of Facebook ads is just super insane. You know, you mentioned you were doing a class recently and 40% of the audience was like very glazed over. You know, that kind of inspired me to say, this is such great knowledge and I want people to take more advantage of it. So actually, you know, I'm almost finished writing a book, and that book is basically the absolute guide to Facebook advertising. And if you go to facebookads.guide, so that's actually, you know, facebookads.guide. You know, we got the URL dot guide, so it's kind of a little bit different. But if you go to facebookads.guide, you know, you can sign up to hear first when we launch this book. But this book is basically, again, really the absolute guide to Facebook advertising, everything from A to Z. You know, the beginner stuff that we talked about. You know, the advanced stuff that we talked about. Once you get to that point, and really even some bonus stuff that you know, we're including is pretty cool, like the Instagram ads. So we'll include like a 24-hour Instagram ad launch plan, so you can have that stuff up in 24 hours, as well as really, you know, there's so much stuff that you can target. One of the freebies that we're giving away is really like a full list of all the different advertising parameters all in one place. So, you know, some of this really cool stuff, I think people will really like it. Again, if you want to just check it out, sign up, you know, for updates so that you know exactly when we launch, you can go to facebookads.guide.
Cool. I'll put that up. And then as far as like connecting with you, do you prefer Twitter? Are you a LinkedIn or Facebook? What's your preferred channel?
Yeah, for sure. So you can easily tweet at me. You know, my Twitter handle is AMOLBIGW. That's Amol Big W due to my really, really long last name. But yeah, that's really the best way to get in touch with me. And you know, feel free to tweet at me if you have questions, and I'll do my best to point you in the right direction.
Cool. Well, I will put all of that in the show notes, and I'm sure people will get a lot out of this because Facebook ads is such a crazy wild west that's developing just so quickly. People are, I think, having a really hard time keeping up. And even me, I'm in this industry, and you know, it feels like they are releasing new stuff all the time. So thanks for coming on and clarifying a bunch of stuff. Hope you'll come back for a follow-up at some point, and we'll definitely let people know when your book is out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. And I really enjoyed it. And I hope you did as well.
Cool, man. Everybody out there, thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time when we have another great conversation with somebody else who's pretty brilliant. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This has been Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. And if this is your first time listening, please do us a favor and drop by iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show and what we can do to improve the show. If you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can be notified by email about new episodes. To subscribe, just drop by truevoicemedia.com/conversations. Tune in next time, where I bring on another incredible guest and have another interesting conversation. See you next time.